saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your humble host, Janine Mercer, and I, as always, am joined here by...
Mimi Steven. Hello, peeps.
Hello.
Hi, how are
you? I'm good, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Yeah. I'll be a lot happier once this whole shit with my Jeep gets figured out.
Yeah.
I'm so done with it. There's nothing worth... I posted on Facebook, I said something about... the insanity of having to deal with, you know, you hear a noise. And it's like, mm-hmm. What is that fucking noise? What is the noise? And it's been like 4 weeks where I've been like, what is the noise? And after a while, you get to a point where like, you don't even care what the noise is anymore because you want to light it on fire.
What kind of a noise is it?
It kind of sounds like, okay, let me set a scene here. So you're sitting in the back of my Jeep. With a hot plate and a container of Jiffy Pop. And you are slowly but surely rocking the container of Jiffy Pop on the hot plate. And it is popping. That's what it sounds like.
And you took it to Firestone.
I took it to Firestone. I also took it to the local like mom and pop up there at the gas station, which is where we used to take our Saturn all the time. And it was fine. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I have to bring it back on Saturday again. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that.
Do you want to go to my guy?
How far away is your guy?
You know where Capitol Drive is?
Yes.
You go... What's that street that's right there? The expressway to Capitol Drive, you go west.
Try Landmarks.
Okay, there's a Home Depot... on the right side.
Okay.
And then... I think there's a Chipotle grill in the southwest corner.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to figure out some place to take it. I'll probably take it back to Firestone, and then if it's still like, I don't hear it, or I don't know what's going on, then I'll just take it to try your guy.
Okay.
And see what happens, because it's like, just like, so done. So beyond done. Not even like halfway done. Like, not even like a little done.
Have you checked your tires?
Yeah, they did, they apparently did a whole inspection.
Okay.
And they were like, yep, you're all good to go. And I went and I got in the car. And the instant, what I should have done was, I should have gotten, put the car back in park, gotten out of the car, and walked right back into the building and been like,
yep.
It's still making that sound. But I didn't realize it until I got over by, like, the grocery store and shit that's there. And then I started to go up the hill. And then as you're accelerating and as you're braking, you can kind of sort of hear it, like, underneath everything else. I'm like, I fucking, yeah.
Take him in the car with you next time.
That's what's happening. That's absolutely what's happening. Because I was like, I can't deal with this anymore, like, feeling like a crazy person. Because I know I'm hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were out in the garage after I got home, I opened up the tailgate and I put my hands on either side, you know, around the tailgate. And I kind of went, you know, back and forth and pushed on it. And you could hear it popping. So, I mean, there's something. Yeah.
I wonder if it's your shacks.
Well, that's what the one guy at the mom and pop shop said. But then when I took it to Firestone, they were like, yeah, you know, your back wheels were all out of alignment, and, like, you had, like, a thump or something that was happening, and I was like, I don't know. It's one of the benefits of owning a used car.
Yep. Know that all
which,
too well.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think, you know how there are some people who are just, like, used car people and are like, yep, no problem. I'm gonna take this shit to the mechanic and get this fixed and it's fine and whatever. I don't think I'm one of those people.
Oh.
I had to come home and take an Ativan because I was like, I can't do it. I just can't do it. But yeah, it's fine. It'll sort itself out.
Good.
Yeah. So what's going on in your world? Your magical Mimi world. Painting, obviously.
Painting.
Yeah.
Lots of back and forth to different doctors. Sophie, my mom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's calm. It's not crazy.
Well, that's good.
So that's good. Yeah. I can do it calm for a little while.
Right. Yeah, I'll take calm over crazy any day.
Yep.
For sure. So we did some babysitting.
Yeah.
That was fun. It was especially fun because we only had to travel 20 minutes to get to where we needed to be versus before it was like 40-ish minutes because it was the difference between Hartford and Menominee Falls from Milwaukee. So that was really nice. We did lots of artwork. We did... we made snowflakes, and then we had fake tea, which I don't really understand that whole, like, little kid here, let me give you some fake tea. And then you have to pretend to drink tea. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I feel like when I was a kid, I pretended to drink tea and forced other humans to pretend to drink tea. But now it's like, I don't. It's like you can't wrap your head around it. Like,
well, if you had real tea... One, the little one would probably get burned.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Two, you'd have stains all over the place.
That's true. And literally, like, I came home and I was like, why am I wet? I'm like, wet everywhere. Like, did they pee on me? Like, we weren't babysitting puppies. We were babysitting kids. Why am I wet? Yeah, I don't know. But they're fantastic. And, you know, myself and my niece played hide-and-go-seek and, I tried to, she's kind of got an attitude, you know,
yeah.
She's four now, so she kind of has an attitude, so, I kind of pulled her aside, you know, before we started playing hide-and-go-seek, and I said, now I know how you play hide-and-go-seek, right? You run into a room and slam the door, and then you stand behind the door and hold the door. That's not hide-and-go-seek. That's run into a bedroom and slam the door and hide behind a door. That's the game you're playing. And she's like, well, let's play hide-and-go-seek, you know, whatever. And I'm like, but this is how you play. And she's like, no, thank you. I was like, okay.
She told you.
It was like, nope. And literally gave me a hair flip.
Oh, how funny.
Gave me a hair flip and walked away. And I was like,
too
fine.
Funny.
Fine. Yeah, she's never even seen Mean Girls. What the hell? So yeah, and then my nephew, of course, is a lot more, he's a lot calmer. Like, he's a lot more, I want to say down to earth, but he's two, so I don't know if that's, like, a thing. But he loves Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh.
So every time Wreck-It Ralph comes on TV, he's like, shh, Wreck-It Ralph. You be quiet, Wreck-It Ralph. And I'm like... So then we had to convince him that he had to go to bed, but he had to watch Wreck-It Ralph all the way, like, to the end of the credits.
Oh.
Until Wreck-It Ralph went away. And then Joanne was like, okay, we have to go to bed now. And he got a little upset, and I was like, nope, we're going to bed. And I picked him up, and I started giving up. My grandfather called them swoobles, but it's like when you like, you know, on their belly or whatever. Yeah. So I gave him a couple of those, and he started laughing his ass off. And we got him up there, and we changed his diaper, and we put him in bed, and he was like, meh, done.
Nice.
Yep. So, yeah, that was fun. Today, I am busted up because I have a bad back. So I'm like, you have to pick them up and play with them and whatever. And it's like, yeah. So I'm a little sore today, but...
Oh, it was worth it.
It was, yeah, it totally was. And it was a lot of fun. I like hanging out with the kiddos. Joanne was like, you're so good with them. I was like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, did you think I was just going to go over there and, like, sit in a corner and play on my phone all night? Like, they invited us over to babysit. I don't know, whatever.
Is that your first time babysitting?
No, we babysat before. The last time I think Joanne went over there by herself and babysat, because I was working, so she went over and did the babysitting stuff. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. I don't know what she thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any brothers and sisters. I'm an only child. So, I mean, that, I feel like that feeds a lot into my personality. Like, I have a bit of an attitude, and I'm kind of full of myself. I'm sorry. Okay, Mimi, I'm really full of myself. God, twist of my arm. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I had a younger cousin, like a first cousin, who was, I was like 14 or 15, I think. And then, she's like 6 years younger than me, or like okay. 7 years younger than me. So, I mean, like, yeah, I used to babysit and stuff. So, I mean, it's not like it's completely out of my wheelhouse, mm-hmm. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun. We actually used paint and didn't make too much of a mess. So
good
stuff. Yep. Macaroni and cheese and hot dogs for dinner.
Nice.
It was good. Yeah. And then they went to bed. And they actually went to bed pretty good. Good. Too. Wasn't too bad. We watched the end of Moana.
Nice.
And, which is like, by the way, an acid trip.
Like, why do you think that?
It's just like, if you, it just, the part with the crab. Where the crab, okay. like, lights up and it's, like, all shiny and shit. I was like, oh, my God. Okay. I had to look away because it was too much.
And the volcano monster part.
And the volcano monster part, yeah. Yeah, I think we came in close to the end of the film. But, of course, it got replayed because all movies get replayed when you have kids over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like Toy Story. I don't know how many times they've seen Toy Story, but it's just insane. Toy Story and Wreck-It Ralph and what's the other one? There's like three. There's Toy Story, Wreck-It Ralph, and oh, Trolls.
Oh, I haven't seen Trolls yet.
Yeah, that's an acid trip too. Ooh. That is something. But yeah, it was fun. That was how I spent my Friday night.
Okay.
That's a good Friday night, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I feel like the closer I get to 40, I'm like, yeah, that was a good Friday night. What did you do? I sat in my pajamas and ate ice cream. It was a good Friday night. Yeah. You didn't do anything? I did. I sat in my pajamas and I ate ice cream. Those are the two things I did. It was fine.
Yeah.
Good. So what do we got today?
I went to Scotland.
You went to Scotland?
To a castle called... Hmm.
Do you talk about Harry Coos?
Who?
Harry Coos?
No.
Don't even know. They're those big fluffy cows.
Oh.
But apparently it comes out as coo. It sounds like coo in the Scottish
instead of cow
accent. Yeah. Harry Coos. Oh. Coos. It's a coo.
No. No. We're going to Glamis Castle, which is called Glarms Castle.
Glarms?
It's pronounced Glarms. Oh. But it's written Glamis, so.
Okay. All right.
What about you?
I kind of went back to my roots a little bit,
yeah.
And I decided to talk about Signal Hill in Newfoundland.
Okay.
So I kind of talk a little bit about the different wars that occurred there and some of the different paranormal experiences that people have had. My dad was actually a security guard up there for some time.
Oh wow!
And so I have some stuff from him, and I kind of threw that in there, and yeah, so it's pretty neat. It's pretty interesting, and it's always nice to kind of go back home occasionally, even if it's only metaphorical.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily physically, but you can kind of mentally go there. That's always fun. So I don't know how long mine is. I feel like mine is, let's see. Yeah, try to get the page here. 6 pages.
Oh, yes, that's a little longer than mine.
Okay. So who went first last time?
I don't know. You choose.
I guess I can go first. Yeah. I feel like you went first last time.
Okay.
But, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not like a competition or anything. Who can go first the most times or whatever. All right.
Are you sure?
I don't think so. I mean, I am, like, I'm still trying to get over my paranoia because, you know, for that whole season you cheated
and
said Well, oh, yeah, you said...
I did cheat, yes.
You said that you went first last time, and then it wasn't. And then I listened back to it, and I was like, you shitter, you fucking... Yeah, anyway.
If you want to go first, I can go first.
No, it's fine. It's fine. All right. So, yeah, this piece is available on the Haunheads blog at haunheads.wordpress.com. If you'd like to leave any paranormal experiences that you've had there, you can absolutely do that. You can also shoot them to us at haunheadscast@gmail.com.
Oh, wait a second.
What
happened to last time's with Bill? Did we get any responses or?
Oh, no. Oh. No.
Well,
not yet anyway.
That sucks, people.
It usually takes a little bit. It's usually like, you know, it takes a few weeks. And like, for example, I'll occasionally get comments about the very first episode that we ever did.
Oh.
And, you know, or the second yeah. episode. Because the first episode was Summer Wind and something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'll occasionally get comments about that second episode. And it's like, oh, well, okay. So maybe people just haven't caught up yet. I don't know. Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They'll send stuff in. We are also on Reddit as Hauntheads Podcast. So if you want to leave your paranormal stories, paranormal experiences, favorite folklore tales with us there, you can absolutely find us on Reddit and do so. We've currently got a call out to try to get some people to send us in their paranormal stuff.
Okay.
Or their creepy stuff, their creepy experiences. So.
I like creepy.
Yeah, creepy is good. Let's see. Okay, so I called this piece Haunted History of Signal Hill, Newfoundland. I believe that this is the third time that I've gone back to the well, to the home well. So, I don't know. I might do it more in the future just because there's so much to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much going on there and there's so much history and so much happened there. You know, it's like... Yeah.
I don't know anything about it, so I like
your
stories.
So there you go. All right. Yeah, I think the last one I did was on the Grace Hospital. I did have somebody reach out about the Grace Hospital that I did. He wanted experiences, paranormal experiences, that people had at the Grace Hospital. And I have a friend who has had paranormal experiences, but he didn't want to be part of it.
Oh, okay.
Because there's still a very real stigma about people who see ghosts.
Okay.
I think that we kind of talked about that the last time. Like, somebody says that they saw Jesus, and they're like, oh, you saw Jesus. Well, that's fantastic. You know, it must mean that you're going into religious life or whatever. And people say, I saw a ghost, and everybody's like, oh, well, that must mean that you're going into a room with padded walls, and right. You're obviously not so... So yeah, I mean, there's still a real stigma attached to that, which is very unfortunate because, you know, I feel like we should be, you know, we can only live on one plane, but I feel like we should be thinking about,
right.
those other options, you know, because right. there's so much more out there. You know, we are just this ball floating in this huge amount of space and like, you don't know what else is out there.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. Don't shit on other people's experiences, people.
That's right.
Because, you know, they could have legitimately had an authentic experience, you mm-hmm. know, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, oh, well,
that's
maybe...
That's why we're here talking about it, because we're interested.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so Haunted History of Signal Hill, Newfoundland. I kind of set a mood, because I think it's important to set a mood, especially when it comes to history, to kind of put things in perspective. So... With that said, the spray from the Atlantic causes your face to itch as you ascend the rocky cliff surrounding the French fort that resembles a medieval castle. Its walls are now bathed in a mottled pink and red of the rising sun. The way has been blocked at every instance, and climbing is the only option. Your arms ache. Below you, the warship you arrived upon is nothing more than a dark shape on the water. You take a deep breath and try not to look down. Your orders are simple. Colonel Amherst has directed you to take the fort back into British command, and as a soldier under his order, you have no choice but to oblige. You can hear the disembodied screams of the wounded coming from the fort above. This is your destination. Your fellow men-at-arms are climbing beside you, dodging gunfire from French troops, and fighting to hold their footing on the jagged face of the cliff. You have never seen war, have never watched life drain from another's eyes, but you're headstrong and willing to do as you are told. As a soldier in Her Majesty's Royal Navy, you know that the honor of dying for the crown will be far more glorious than falling to your death upon the jagged rocks below. So you climb. The state will forever live in infamy whether you survive this conflict or not. Despite the uneven surface and the weight of all you carry, you finally reach the summit and feel your stomach drop as a bullet strikes you in the chest. You fall to your knees and watch for a moment as your comrades fight their way forward, and then everything fades to black. So, from Wikipedia, at dawn on September 15, 1762, Royal Navy warships anchored behind the steep hill with masts out of view of the French. British troops then scaled the cliff side onto the hill itself. The surprise was total and complete. The engagement was brief, but fatal. The commander of the French detachment, Guillaume de Bellecombe, was seriously injured. On the British side, a bullet shattered the legs of one of Colonel Amherst's officers, MacDonald. The French withdrew to the fort. The British began painstakingly bringing artillery pieces up the cliff and constructed small batteries and then proceeded to use them to bombard the fort until the French capitulated. At the close of the battle, Signal Hill was in the arms of the British. Strengthened by this advantageous situation, 3 days later they obtained the capitulation of the French garrison of St. John's, which consisted of just over 1,500 French regulars. So that's just kind of a little bit of information on the background of the French occupation of Signal Hill. Signal Hill served other purposes as well. It was the location that Guillermo Marconi sent the first transatlantic message. There used to be a building there that he sent it from, but it burnt down. I believe that they used to keep the kite that he used to send the message at Signal Hill. But they actually moved it to the airport now, which I think is stupid. Okay. I don't know why they needed to do that. It was almost like taking it from its home and moving it somewhere else. It's very odd. But yeah, you can go there. Like it's a tourist destination. You can go inside. You can go all the way up to the top and see all the way out into the Atlantic Ocean through the Narrows. Yeah, many, many times. Cool. Many times. There's not much to do in Newfoundland. So you visit the National Historic Sites and often get drunk. That's just what you do. Or you go to the mall and you find a place in the darkest part of the parking lot and you get drunk. And whatever. Yeah, that's what you do. That's basically what you do. There's not too much to do. So, my father is a security guard. He has been for a lot of years. It's his career. And for several years, he was charged with protecting one of the most historic locations in Newfoundland, which was Signal Hill. He worked his way up from night shifts patrolling the docks, which is actually very dangerous because the foreign ships that were brought in for overfishing, there's a limit, and if you fish within that limit, then you can be fined and stuff can be confiscated and whatever. So those ships would be brought into the harbor, and then he would be charged with keeping those ships secure and making sure they didn't leave. But the problem with that is you're out there with like your mag light with your torch, and you're trying to make sure that everything is like locked and everything else, and you have to go up the gangplanks of these ships.
Right.
To make sure that the ships are secure and that they're locked up. Well, all it really takes is one wrong step, or you step on a rat that's as big as a cat, and you fall between the ship and the dock, and the next time the ship decides to shift, you get crushed between the ship and the dock. And it can happen very quickly. So he did that for several years. He then moved on to the airport. There's only one airport in St. John's, and I think it has, I want to say it has four terminals, Not a huge airport. It used to have one terminal, so we're moving on up. But yeah, so it's not very big. But he was charged with securing that with a small crew of guys. So when the position at Signal Hill became available, my father jumped at the chance for a change because he had gone to all these other places, right. And you know the hours were crappy and whatever. So this became available, and it was a big deal. It wasn't that he didn't like his other positions. It was just that the tourist site was easy enough to look after at night. There weren't a lot of people that went up to the tower after dark. It's very dark up there. There are no lights. There's like a light, I think, on top of Signal Hill, like on top of the tower. But that's literally it. There's nothing. Okay. It's just pitch. Let's see here. It was a popular place for teens to make out. Go up there and drink, whatever. But he could handle that. So he was assigned the night shift, meaning that it was just him alone with a flashlight because they're not armed.
Right.
Just wandering around in the dark, making sure that everything was safe and locked and secure. So yeah, he would wander around not only Cabot Tower on the top of Signal Hill, but he would also look after the gift shop.
Okay.
So his office was in the gift shop.
Okay.
It was actually pretty cool because I got to go there a couple of times after hours.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it after hours is it's kind of creepy in there. because it's only in operation during the day, like during the week.
Right.
And Saturday, I believe. I think it's closed on Sunday. But yeah, I mean, there's nobody there. And it's you can hear a pin drop. It's just so quiet. And they have all these different displays set up. And it's like, oof, yeah, it's creepy. So his first few shifts there went well enough. It took him a little while to get the feel for the inspection and the patrol schedule because they have specific schedules that they have to follow. And it's like every couple of hours you get up and you take a walk, you know, whatever. So, and then on top of that, he had to figure out the keys. Because you're given a ring of keys, and right. It's like, okay, what does this do? What does that do? So he had to figure that all out. But overall, it seemed pretty simple. So he had to make sure that all the entryways and the exits were secure, ensure that the buildings were empty of tourists at the close of the business day. That's when his shift would start. It wasn't until after roughly a month of patrols that things started to get a little weird.
Oh.
Little strange.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. So, like, for example, at night, he would see lights on in the tower. There are no lights on inside the tower at night. It's completely black up there. Like, so when a light comes on, you're like, whoa, shit. Like, there's a light right there because it's so dark.
Did it look like a real bright light? So
it was, like, random lights. So, like, not like a bulb controlled by a switch, mm-hmm. like somebody was flipping on a switch and moving through the rooms. The lights seemed to dance in front of the windows. And at first it would be towards the top of the tower and then towards the bottom. Okay. And it would almost like move, like you could see it moving between floors. Okay.
So it was like somebody's carrying a candle.
Kind of, yeah, or like a lantern or something. Yeah, it was very strange. So it was almost as if there was literally like somebody inside wandering. When you think about that, you think about like the soldiers and the French occupation and what they would have had to do to keep that place secure and in their hands, in their control. And it was a very advantageous position because you could see all the way out through the Narrows, all the way out into the Atlantic Ocean. So you saw when warships were coming or when merchants were coming, and you could signal to everybody else and be like, hey, you know, this is coming. It used to be called the Lookout.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually it came to be known as Signal Hill. He'd go to check it out because that was his job, but he'd find nothing, and he had zero explanation for what he'd seen because it was just gone. Sometimes it would go out like as he was making the climb up to the hill because they didn't give him like a golf cart or anything.
Right.
Like he just walked it every night, and it's steep.
Right.
Like, it's a steep incline. So he would just, like, kill himself trying to get up to the top of the hill. And then the light would go out, and he'd be like, oh, I gotta go check it out anyway. So he'd go and check it out, whatever. But it would happen off and on throughout the night. In addition to this activity, the gift shop and the visitor center began to creep him out. So, like, he'd lay down a set of keys and go to the restroom. And then he'd return to find the keys on the opposite side of the desk from where he'd put them.
Oh.
Yeah, so there's, like, some poltergeist activity in there. There are mannequins in there in these little scenes. So, like, you walk in and you'll see a soldier with a lantern leaning over, checking on a little boy and a little girl in a bunk bed.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see, like, guys huddled around a fire. And they're all wearing these uniforms. So the garb that they're dressed in is actual, like, stuff that people actually wore.
Right.
So the energies of all those people is in there. There's also the fact that when he would walk past the mannequins, it was like their eyes were following him,
mm-hmm.
which is totally a thing. That happens to me, too. Now, I don't like dolls because I feel like the dolls are watching me
okay.
all the time. Like, yeah, I don't like dolls. But this it's a similar kind of phenomena with, like, the mannequins because they have these painted faces and they're like the old school mannequins. Like, well, their eyes are painted on.
Who doesn't like dolls?
They're not dolls. They're collectibles.
And you have...
It's different.
The
no.
animals.
It's different.
On the walls.
No, it's different. It's different. Yeah, no, I'm not freaked out at all by taxidermy. You fucking mannequins, man. So, see, I don't have any mannequins.
Well, maybe we should get you one.
No. I don't want any mannequins. Okay, so let's see. He also said that it was like the figures were moving, so like he would go somewhere and walk his rounds, and it'd take him like 15 minutes to get from one part of the visitor center to another and walk back again.
Uh-huh.
And when he walked back, it was like the lantern was a little bit lower or a little bit higher than it had been before, and just very slight differences, but you notice because you have nothing else to do.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like he could just pop in his earbuds and listen to his iPod. Like, that wasn't a thing. You know, you can't... A, they didn't exist. And B, you can't do that because you need to be paying attention
right.
all the time. So...
How long was he at this job?
Oh, he was there for a couple of years.
Okay.
And then eventually he moved out to the Cape Spear Lighthouse, which is another National Historic Site.
Okay.
And again, like, middle of nowhere... World War II barracks.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, you can still walk through them. Like, you walk underground and walk through them.
Cool.
And, like, they have all the armories and stuff, like, where they kept all the extra supplies. And everything is still there. All the battlements are still there. There's a lot of weird energy there, too. Maybe I should cover that at some point.
Maybe.
But, yeah, very, very creepy places. And just dark. Like, pitch black. Just... nothing. And nobody. Like, when he was there, there was nobody. If he had gotten into trouble, the nearest person was, like, 10 minutes down the hill. So, I mean, And if he had to walk, then it wouldn't have been good. Let's see here. So... the uniforms displayed on the mannequins had been worn by members of the Royal Newfoundland Regiment around 1812, 1817, and the Royal Newfoundland Regiment Band of 1795. So I suppose it's no surprise that the spirits of those who wore the uniforms previously might make an appearance during my father's nightly rounds. In addition to securing the tower from the visitor center, he also had to walk the path from the center to the tower several times each night. And as I said, there's no lights on the road. The Atlantic Ocean is to your right, and a swath of, like, sprawling, boggy land lies to your left. So there's nothing. Like I said, if anything had happened to him during these walks, he would have been stuck until the sun came up and someone came to relieve him. So it's pretty scary stuff. So one night he was walking along the road towards the tower, and he noticed movement near a pond to his left. Now, this pond is called Dead Man's Pond because apparently it's fed by the ocean, and divers that have gone to explore it have never actually been able to reach the bottom because it's far too deep. So it's actually a pond that's fed by the ocean. It's pretty cool. It also earned this title because people have drowned in the pond, and the pond was used to dispose of the bodies who were hanged on Gibbet Hill, which was the location of a rather active gallows way back when. In 1869, two little girls were skating on the pond and fell through the ice, and a local man named Frederick Carter Jr. attempted to save them, but he too lost his life, so all three drowned. My father witnessed two small figures seemingly floating along the surface of the pond. It was dark, but it seemed like these two figures had their own internal light source. Mm-hmm. It was very, very weird. And they moved about. They were oblivious to the fact that my dad was there at all. And then they just faded away. Many people have reported ghostly apparitions on and around Signal Hill. A friend of mine returned from relieving himself with a look of sheer horror on his face. My friends would often, and I would often go to Signal Hill after dark and share a flask and like try to scare one another. And this friend in particular was a prankster, and he'd scared me numerous fucking times. So when he came back, I was like, dude, you're crying wolf. Like, you didn't see shit. Like, there's nothing going on. So when he said that he saw something, nobody believed him. Everybody was like, no, you're full of shit. We don't believe you. So he said he was taking a piss by the edge of the wall close to, like, the overhang, overlooking Dead Man's Pond. Mm-hmm. And he saw bodies swinging by their necks on the old gallows on Gibbet Hill. We scoffed at him because there was no gallows on Gibbet Hill. It was long gone.
Right.
So, but he said he saw the gallows and he saw the people hanging. Yeah, literally worst wind chime ever.
Did he ever go back?
I don't think he did. Well, he didn't go back with us. I don't know if he ever went back on his own or with somebody else. But, I mean, it's one of those things. Like I said, like, there's nothing really to do. Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you do on the weekends? You go hang out with your friends. Well, what are you going to do? Well, you know, let's go to a fucking 17th century, you know, castle-looking thing and fucking hang out at night. Yeah, I don't know. So, a little bit about gibbeting. Dissection and gibbeting were punishments that had long been established in England and her colonies for crimes of traitors, murderers, highwaymen, pirates, and, of course, the worst of the worst, sheep stealers. I cannot abide a sheep stealer. The intention was that the body of Peter Downing, Downing was convicted in early April 1834 for the brutal murders of schoolteacher Mr. Bray, his infant son, and a servant girl. And for his crimes, Downing was sentenced to be hanged, dissected, and gibbeted. And his body would be left as a grim reminder and would stay on the gibbet for a year or more until it rotted away or was eaten by birds. Gibbeting was formally legalized in Britain by the Murder Act of 1752. It was not generally accepted by the people in Newfoundland. Many were offended by the sight and the odor of a decaying body. Others believed that the decaying bodies would spread disease.
Right.
Others still felt that being hung by the neck until dead was good enough, and even a criminal should meet his creator in a full body. In Harbor Grace, Dr. Sterling heeded the content of the note from Angry Citizens. The decayed body of Peter Downing was buried immediately at the courthouse, and no attempts were made to have the incident investigated or the body gibbeted again. So in Newfoundland, the process of gibbeting is actually very well documented. In St. John's, Gibbet Hill, a small peak close to Signal Hill, takes its name from this practice. The location was very intentional. Anyone looking towards Signal Hill would see the gibbeted bodies. So it was basically like a reminder to heed the laws of the colony. Newfoundland, for a number of years, held the dubious distinction of being the last place in the British Empire to proceed with gibbeting. So for those of you who may not know what gibbeting entails, Wikipedia states that a gibbet is any instrument of public execution, including a guillotine, an executioner's block, an impalement stake, hanging gallows, or related scaffold. But gibbeting itself refers to the use of a gallows-type structure from which the dead or dying bodies of criminals are hung on public display to deter other existing or potential criminals. Occasionally, the gibbet was also used as a method of execution, with the criminal being left to die of exposure, thirst, and/or starvation. The term gibbet may also be used to refer to the practice of placing a criminal on display within a gibbet. So the practice is also called hanging in chains, or they would actually put them in a cage, like a human-sized cage, and they would have to stay there until they starved to death or died of thirst. So yeah.
Okay.
Now, to this day, I don't know if my friend was telling the truth. He always insisted that he'd seen the bodies swaying in the wind, and his face was the palest I'd ever seen it. If anybody has ever met a Newfoundlander, you know that we're kind of a pale bunch. We don't get much sun. We're a little whitey, McWhite white. But he was pale. He was really, really pale. After he told us what he'd seen, he promptly threw up, but that could have just as easily been due to the liquor that he was consuming, so I don't know if he, like, freaked himself out so much that he threw up. I don't know. As far as more ghostly tales are concerned, visitors to St. John's have reported hearing a woman wailing in or around Cabot Tower. There's an old story that tells of a woman who was struggling to keep warm by the fire. She was cradling her baby, kind of in her arms. The fire had no means of venting, so sometimes she'd have to open a window and let the smoke out. Then the room would become cold, and she'd have to close the window again. So it was like this vicious cycle of, yeah. She did this several times, but at some point, she fell asleep. And then when she awoke, coughing from the smoke, she realized that her baby had died from smoke inhalation. So it's said that her ghost returned to the place of that terrible accident and cries out for a lost baby. Hikers have claimed to see ghostly apparitions hoisting flags at the top of Cabot Tower. Around 1811 to 1958, flags were flown at the top of the structure to mark the approach of certain merchant vessels. The flags would alert those on the harbor front that particular vessels were coming to dock. And then that would allow them time to find space for that particular ship so that they could offload the cargo.
Right.
Because the dock is not, there's not that much space to work with. It's kind of like long and narrow-ish. So when you come in through this very narrow entryway, they call it the Narrows. So when you come in through the Narrows, there's not really many places that you can go. So they work to try to, you know, find people space. You go to the WordPress site, to the blog, you can see examples of all the different flags from all the different merchants. Okay. Some of those merchants are actually still in St. John's. They still send their stuff there. So it's kind of cool to actually see that they're still represented. Mm-hmm. They also had some sort of a celebration or something where they started flying some of the original signal flags.
Okay.
Or maybe not the, well, the original designs. They redid the signal flags to show the original designs. So they weren't actually the original flags. Okay. Yeah. Each of the flags has a marker, so like a star or a cross or a symbol or something like that, that identifies the different person, the different merchant. And then in turn, the ships would fly the flag of the merchants whose goods they were carrying. So not every ship carried the same goods every time. Sometimes it would be different. In addition to seeing these hanging figures and seeing people having been gibbeted and whatnot. Figures have also been seen tossing remains into Dead Man's Pond. A friend of my father's claimed that on one of his walkabouts late in the evening, he was also a security guard, he came upon two men who were dressed in period clothing, throwing remains into the pond from a pile to their left. Obviously distressed by what he was seeing, he called out to the two men and told them to stop what they were doing. The two men did stop. They looked at him, and then they just faded away.
Ooh.
So it was very, yeah. When my father's friend went to the spot that they were standing, he couldn't see any evidence of them being there, even though it had rained the night before, and the spot was quite soggy, quite muddy.
Scary.
Spooky. There is literally no end to the ghost stories told around St. John's. There are even historical tours that highlight that part of Newfoundland history. If you're ever in Newfoundland, go on the Haunted Hike walking tour. It is amazing. It's fantastic. The tour guide will take you to all of the creepy haunted spots in St. John's for just $10 a person. I believe the tour is around like 2 hours long, but it is a walking tour, and it runs rain or shine. So be prepared to walk and wear a poncho.
Okay.
because if it rains, it doesn't stop. St. John's is a city steeped in history, both good and bad. As with a lot of historical places, there's positive and negative. But I am proud to call it my first home, and I hope that you'll take a moment to learn a little bit more about it and maybe even visit it someday, because it's worth the trip.
So how long a drive is it from here to...
Well, I mean, you can't drive directly there from here.
Oh.
Because you have to take a ferry. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so you have to hop on the car ferry, which if you leave from North Sydney in Nova Scotia, you can get there in, I think it's like 7.5 hours, 8 hours, just on the ferry. So it'd take you probably 2.5 or 3 days to drive from here to Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. And then you'd go from North Sydney on the ship with your car to Newfoundland. And depending on where you're, well, see, it depends where you're going, because if you're going to Port of Basque, then that's going to be like a 13-hour drive to get to St. John's. If you're leaving from North Sydney and going to Argentia, Argentia is a lot closer to St. John's, but it means a longer ferry ride. So, it depends. I mean, if you go to Port of Basque and you get off in Port of Basque, then you can just drive and you can see all the beautiful hillsides and little fishing communities and stuff along the way. It's very pretty. If you go to Argentia, you still get to see a lot of that stuff, but you don't get to see as much of it.
Okay.
So, I'm not sure. I feel like if you go to Port of Basque and you get off the ferry there and drive, I think you have to drive through the isthmus, which is very cool. It's like foggy all the time. Like nobody lives there. It's just foggy all the time. But it's very cool because it could be like a bright sunny day, sun splitting the rocks kind of day, and then you go into the isthmus and it's just foggy.
Weird.
And just like, gloomy and whatever, and then you come out the other side of it and you know because the sun is back and whatever. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, but yeah, so I'll have to tackle some more of the history in later episodes, because I do have some other ideas. I really want to talk about Edward Mordrake. That was the guy that had the face on the back of his head.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about him. And there was one other thing, too. I have a bunch of stuff saved on Facebook. So I just have to go through all my saved shit and be like, okay, I want to do this and this and this. And yeah.
Cool.
Just do it. But yeah.
Good.
Yep.
All right.
What you got?
So we're going to Scotland.
Scotland.
And we're going to Glamis Castle, which is actually pronounced Glarms.
Glarms.
Castle. Glarms.
Glarms Castle.
But I'm just going to call it Glamis Castle.
Okay.
So, Glamis Castle, Scotland, and the eternal souls that reside there. They are the Monster of Glamis, the Grey Lady, the Earl Beardy, the Tongueless Woman,
ooh,
and many, many more. Today we are only going to talk about a few of the ghosts, but first a little history of Glamis Castle. Hmm. The castle was first built for the royal family about 1016 as a hunting lodge. King Malcolm II was murdered there.
Right.
And there's a little blurb about Macbeth and how in Macbeth it says, and Glarms Castle, something, something, something. But I didn't want to go tracing that side, so I didn't look at that. Mentioning that in Macbeth, it's mentioned.
So, that's cool, though.
Yeah.
And the fact that it still exists, and it existed in Shakespeare's time. That's always cool.
The castle is owned by the Bowes Lyons family, who have held title to the castle since Robert the Bruce, Bruce gave the land to the Bowes Lyons family in 1372 upon the marriage of his daughter to Sir John Lyon.
Oh, so it was kind of like a dowry almost. Yeah. Oh, okay.
The Bowes Lyons family is now known as the Earls of Strathmore. Many additions and renovations have occurred over the many years. Scottish poet James Beattie once said of the castle, "It towers over the landscape with an air of haughty defiance and sullen gloom." Dun, 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 dun. Okay. So a horrible secret has been kept by the Bowes Lyons family, only passed down from father to son. No one else can know. We still don't know the secret. However, a workman once knocked a hole through a secret hidden room and was promptly shipped off to Australia, or paid off to never speak about what he saw.
Oh.
So, another story. I'm going to get back to that secret later on.
Okay.
But another story is of a surfer girl who accidentally found out the secret, and the Earl had his guards cut out her tongue. She managed to break free and run from the guards, but they caught up to her and killed her. She is still running and silently screaming with blood dripping down her face.
Oh, God.
She also has been seen in a barred window peering down onto the lawns with blood coming down.
Yeah.
There's also a tale of a small black child who sits quietly on a stone seat outside the Queen's bedroom. He is said to have been heavily mistreated hundreds of years ago, but one tale says that the boy was hunted down and killed by the Earl and his friends.
Oh.
Very sad, but people have seen him sitting on a stone bench right outside one of the bedrooms.
Oh, wow. Like full figured apparition?
Yeah, and then he disappears.
Huh.
Now back to the secret rooms. In 1486, there was a feud between two clans, the Ogibe clan and the Lindsay clan.
Hmm.
Not knowing the Earl had made a deal with the Lindys, the Ogibe clan sought safety from the Earl, who took them to a secret room in the cellars where he locked the clan in. 2 weeks later, someone went down there to let them out. All were dead except for one.
Oh.
And he only stayed alive because he ate the others.
Oh.
Yum.
Wow.
So there's multiple tales of children being awoken at night by knight in armor leaning over their little beds.
Hmm.
He is considered to be one of the old earls. Earl Beardy. He is thought to have been a nasty man who was a gambler, a womanizer, and a drunkard.
Hmm.
His story goes like this. One evening he was drinking heavily and shouting for someone to come play cards with him. Being that this was a Sunday and the Sabbath, no one wanted to play with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he bellowed that he would play the devil himself. A little while later, a tall man dressed in a long dark coat came a-knockin', and he asked Earl Beardy if he wanted to play with him. Of course the Earl said yes, and people, meaning the servants and the guests, could hear swearing and shouting from the room they were playing in. And the servants believed that the Earl lost his soul to the devil in the card game.
Oh.
And now the Earl haunts the castle. He actually did not die that day in the castle.
Oh.
He died a castle in, I want to say, Dunkirk.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's just a tale.
Right.
And he didn't, like, die immediately or anything, but he was always a very nasty, nasty man, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, it's interesting because when it comes to the devil in folklore, I don't know, there's some speculation, right, that this probably didn't happen. It's just a story, right? Yeah. So there's a story in Newfoundland about a young girl who can't find, I think it's, she can't find a date to a dance or something. And she says, you know, I'll dance with the devil himself. And the devil comes to the door and picks her up and takes her to the dance and whatever. And then there's, like, there's this whole thing where, like, she tricks the devil and whatever. And, you know, because he wants to take her soul and he wants to take her back to hell and whatever. Yeah. Oh. So, yeah, I mean, it's the devil visiting is a common theme in a lot of folklore tales. It's very interesting. And across cultures, too. Yeah.
Cool.
It's cool.
So people, guests and people throughout the ages have heard swearing and shouting throughout the castle. There's another ghost known by the name of the Grey Lady.
Hmm.
She seems to inhabit the castle chapel. She can be seen walking through the chapel, then disappearing through the walls.
Hmm.
She is believed to be the ghost of Lady Janet Douglas. She was charged with being involved in the plot to murder James the Fifth of Scotland.
Hmm.
There was absolutely no evidence of this.
Right.
However, her brothers were actively involved in trying to dethrone him and other mischievous things. So they were killed, and then she was charged, but they really didn't have any evidence. So then they tortured her family to say that she's a witch. So he burned her at the stake in 1537.
Wow.
For being a witch. Yeah. Now we're going to go back to the tale of the Monster of Glamis.
Hmm.
So the tale of the Monster of Glamis has been a secret of an uncorroborated tale since about the 1840s or so. It is a tale shared from father to son and not to be shared with anyone else. In 1904, just before the 13th Earl of Strathmore died, he told a friend, "If you knew the horrifying secret, you would get down on your knees and give thanks it was not your secret."
Hmm.
The villagers told of having seen a very deformed figure on the roof of the castle at night. It's believed that at some point there was a severely deformed child born to the Bowes Lyon family that they had locked away in a secret room. The secret is still secret.
That's a common theme, too.
Yep.
Because wasn't it the Lent Mansion? They had a secret room where they hid a deformed boy. And
yep. They did that a lot in history with kids with Down syndrome and any kind of minor deformity, even.
Right, yeah.
They were hidden away.
Hmm.
We really do not have the answer to it. It still remains with the family. The tale of Glamis Monster goes like this. It is believed that in 1821, Lord and Lady Strathmore welcomed a first son, whom they named Thomas. Shortly after being born, Thomas died, or so it was told.
Hmm.
Tales have emerged that perhaps Thomas did not die, but was horribly deformed and was placed in a secret room hidden very deep in the castle, so no one would know.
Yep.
It's believed that each subsequent male heir would be brought to the secret room to see the horror locked away.
Hmm.
It is rumored that the creature hidden away had superhuman strength, no neck, a barrel-shaped torso, and tiny limbs all covered in hair.
So he was a football player?
Yeah. No one really knows for sure. There is one letter in existence in which the 12th Earl of Strathmore wrote to his wife about the family mystery. This is what he wrote. "My dearest, I have been into the room. I have heard the secret. And if you wish to please me, you will never mention the subject to me again."
Hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, as for other goings-on in the castle, many people seen ghostly faces at windows. A bent old woman dressed in black carrying a bundle of something, we don't know what, into the courtyard, and then she disappears.
That's never a good thing when you see a creepy old lady carrying a bundle of something.
Yeah.
That's old. You can't trust old people.
People have heard screaming coming from unoccupied rooms, hammering sounds all through the night.
You know what? The last time I heard of an old lady going somewhere late at night with a bundle, it was when my great-grandma was in a home, and there was a lady who crept into the kitchen and filled a bundle with ham, and then crept back to her room. So, I mean, it's either like pieces of corpses or ham. But I'm thinking probably in this case, creepier than ham.
Yeah.
It was fucking, it was a big bundle of ham. I don't know.
There's one final tale about Lamb's Castle. When the castle was being built originally, it was being built on a nearby hill. The builders would build part of the wall, building the stones up.
Yeah.
And the next day they would come to see the wall torn down and stones everywhere. Oh. Eventually, someone heard a voice saying, "Build not on this enchanted spot, where man hath neither part nor lot, but build down in yonder bog, where it will neither shake nor shog."
Okay.
The people followed the voice and built Glamis Castle where it stands today. It is thought that the fairy folk scared the humans away.
Yeah.
They call this hill Hunter's Hill or Fairy Pans.
Hmm.
Now, in the 1950s, there was a movie made based on Glamis Castle.
Yeah.
And the movie's called The Maze, but it wasn't very accurate, people say.
Huh.
But it was based on a book that was written about Glamis Castle. So we might have to look that up.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Cool.
And watch it.
I bet it was ham. Fucking old lady with her ham.
She's hungry.
Jesus. I don't know. I mean, I would imagine that, you know, you'd probably get pretty hungry if you were in a home and you were only fed twice a day.
Oh.
Because I think they had a breakfast and then they had, like, a supper or a dinner.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't really have a lunch. It was, like, on your own, like, snacks. Okay. Because we used to bring my grandnan, like, crackers and stuff like that to keep in her room. I think she had a mini fridge in there. So she had, like, some milk for her tea, and she had a little tea kettle, and she could, okay, you know, do that. She didn't do it so much after she lost her legs to diabetes, but before that, she used to make tea, and she used to have people over to her room, and they would have little crackers and tea and whatever for lunch. So
how cute.
But yeah, ham, totally ham. I think that lady had some sort of dementia as well. And probably should have had a closer watch.
Probably.
On her. She ran away a few times.
Oh.
And they found her again. But, yeah, the ham. They found that ham, that bundle of ham, under her mattress. after it had gone off. Yeah.
Oh, gross.
Yep. Yep.
Gross.
Yep, the ham lady.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, in terms of the Villisca Axe Murder House,
yeah,
it's like 7 hours away, I think. Yeah, and I did a piece on the Villisca Axe Murder House, and I think I reported on it on an episode of Haunt Heads that was a solo episode. But it's a very interesting place. It has some very interesting history. It is still unsolved to this day.
Right.
And yeah, I believe you can go there and you can stay there overnight. I don't know how far in advance you have to book it. But yeah, I mean, like, hop in the car and be there in 7 hours, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Might be cool.
I think it would be very cool.
Yeah. So, what you got going on this week? Anything fun?
No, but I forgot to mention what I did last week.
Oh, what'd you do last week?
I got my first tattoo.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you got your first tattoo.
Yeah, it was cool. It didn't hurt. Feels like a sunburn.
Oh, it didn't hurt at all. You know what? I find it feels like a sunburn when they're doing it.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I'm getting little burns. It doesn't feel...
It's like, for me, it was just like scratching.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I mean, it depends where you get it, too. Like, I have a tattoo on my neck, and that was
Well, the
very...
neck and the head is supposed to be very...
That was very uncomfortable. I mean, not only because... Like, I had to lie down.
Yeah.
And I had my head, like, at a weird angle so that they could do it. It was only 15 minutes, but it felt like an hour. Like, it just, oh, God. And you can feel the vibrations in your skull.
Ooh.
Like, it's real, bleh. Yeah.
Mine took an hour and 45 minutes.
Seriously? That's not even that bad. Where'd you go?
Custom Tattoo in Farwell.
Oh.
I went to Troy.
Oh.
Troy did a fantastic job.
It is a very nice tattoo.
I'm very, very happy with it.
Did you take a break?
No.
It doesn't look like it should take an hour and 45 minutes. Like, mine is supposed to, the one that I have planned that I'm going to get is supposed to take, like, 6 hours, I think. So I haven't decided yet whether or not I'm going to sit for the 6 hours or whether I'm going to do, like, the outline and then come back for the fill. Yeah. But
I could have sat longer. But now I'm kind of thinking about what I want for my next one.
See, it's an addiction.
It is.
Yep, now you have one, and you're like, that didn't hurt so bad, and now you have to get more. People often ask me, did my tattoos hurt?
Yeah.
And I only have two. I have the one on my neck, and then I have one on my upper arm on the right that says, always in my heart. And Joanne has the same one.
Aww.
But hers is... Hers is on her shoulder.
Okay.
On her shoulder blade. It probably says white people are assholes because it's in Chinese script. And, whatever. But it's fine. It's fine. To us, it means always in my heart. So that's what we say it says. But yeah, so I've had the itch for a very long time to get another tattoo, and I have so many ideas. Like, I want to get a Poe, an Edgar Allan Poe related tattoo.
Oh yeah.
I'm knocking out my
little black crow.
I'm knocking out my crow and my pumpkin because I want to get a Halloween themed tattoo.
Yeah.
And then it's gonna say "Stay Spooky" in kind of like scrolly script.
Uh huh.
For Hauntheads, and the crow is for Corvus Review. Which, by the way, if you want to submit to Corvus Review, Corev, Inc., I-N-K, at gmail.com. That window is going to close pretty soon. So if you want to submit any of your written work, poetry, art, if you do photography, painting, you can absolutely do that and be considered for inclusion. So it's coming up. If you want additional information about that, you can go to corev.inc. So, so I'm gonna knock a lot of things out of the park with this next tattoo, and then I really want to get like a tall ship. That's very much part of my culture, my heritage. So I want to do something about that, or something with a compass, something about home, finding your way home.
Yeah.
I'm very big into like that idea that no matter where you are, there's somewhere in the world there's a candle burning in the window for you.
Yeah.
That'll never go out because that is home, intrinsically. So.
Cool.
So I'm kind of hoping it's going to be done soon because it's being designed.
Right.
So I'm kind of hoping it's going to be done soon so that I can get it done because I'm itchy.
Yeah.
I got the itches. Gotta get the itches out.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think we are done for this week. The only thing that I have going on next week is work.
Yeah.
work, and then editing this podcast and getting it out on Monday.
Cool.
And that's it. Did you watch The Royal Wedding?
No.
No, you didn't?
No, did you?
I did not.
I thought for sure you were going to say you did.
No, I did not. I saw the wedding of Diana and Charles. I remember that quite vividly. I didn't. Have you seen the pictures of Prince Harry's ex? He invited her to the wedding, but he didn't invite her to the reception.
Why would he invite her to the wedding?
It's so funny. It's like... They,
and
like,
she was there?
And she was there. She came. I don't even know why he would come.
And so they put her on TV.
So, there's like pictures of her on the internet, and she just has this look on her face like, oh, look at what I missed out on kind of look. And they were together for like 5 years. So, I mean, they had a good, stable relationship for 5 years. But then they went their separate ways, and he was like, oh, hey, by the way, I'm getting married, on this date, and here you go, here's an invitation to the wedding. But don't come to the reception. It was just like...
I wouldn't go.
It was like, na-na-na-na-poo-poo, I'm getting married. Oh, no, we don't want you at the reception. Go home. Come and see me get married and be happy, and then go the hell home, because I don't want to see
you. I did look at a picture of Meghan Markle in her wedding gown,
mm-hmm.
and her tiara was lovely.
Yes, very pretty. Did you see the picture of Her Majesty riding to the, I don't know if she was riding to the church or not. She was going somewhere. She was being chauffeured somewhere, and in the back is a guy, Meghan's beagle.
At the wedding or the and it's day just, before?
It was the day of the wedding, but I don't know if they were going to the church or if they were going somewhere else. But yeah, it's like he's like sticking his little beagle nose out the window or whatever because, you know, she just lost her last corgi.
Right.
And so I think she was trying to like fill the four paws hole in her heart.
Aww.
But yeah, it's so funny. She's like sitting there, you know, she's very demure because Queen Elizabeth is very demure.
Right.
And the dog is like up, like looking out through the window with his ass going. It's just so funny. The funniest thing ever. Oh man. All right. Are we done for this week?
We're done.
Cool.
We're done.
All right. So until next time, this is Jeanine Mercer signing off.
This is Nina Steven. Peace out.
Peace out. And as always, stay spooky. Oh god. Now it's time to go to bed.
St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long white table.